say everything I want to say in English. And Timo, present yourself.
Yeah, my name is Timo. I live in Rio for 15 years now. I'm part of a small collective in the urban periphery. Participate of the Institute of Libertarian Studies. And we're building the Teia dos Povos, which is like a people's network. So, I mean, it's different things we can talk about. The first question would be now, which language do you think we should use?
Because our experience 11 years ago, it was like we tried to do like some automatic translation. So Mario Rui, a comrade from Portugal, speaks French very well. And myself, I prefer to speak in Spanish. That's more or less accessible for some persons. But we used to suggest, we try to have like one or two translators to France, someone that can translate Spanish to France, and in the other part of the room, one or two persons that can translate Spanish to English. Is it possible? Yeah, I can try, but I... Yeah. So, okay. So we go ahead with English and... the Portuguese is happy. The other thing is this activity is live streamed. It's online, so all the persons that don't want to have your face on internet, I suggest go backwards, so you can...
And then another thing is, I think when you ask, we will ask you to ask questions and give opinions, whatever. I think you come forward and you use the microphone, because then it will be on the on camera, okay?
And Timo can translate if you have questions in German. Timo can translate in French. Mario Rui can translate. So we try to manage it. There is anyone that can translate it to French, English to French? So sit close to the comrades that need, please. Yeah.
I have one question because of the camera. At the last talk, they sit there, so the camera just got them from behind, so those people weren't on the camera.
I don't know.
Talk to him. He will.
If you sit there, the camera.
If we sit here, you can use only that camera. Is that, I guess?
Microphone and not look in the camera, it's okay. But you have to talk in the microphone for the sound question, no? If you don't use the microphone, it will not be here well.
But I can go there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
You see? Yes.
I think the cable is fine long enough. If somebody helps with that, bring the microphone to the people.
No audience will be on screen. Yeah. So,
okay, if the micro is enough, I can go there and with the micro like that. It's not. You don't need to come here and to be seen by the camera. Okay.
So let's start. First thing is. We imagine to do like a really brief historical about anarchism in Brazil, and then get in what interests us more, that's the contemporary anarchism during Lula government, during Bolsonaro government, and now at the once again Lula on government. And feel free to interrupt and do questions. Our interest is to share and think together. So as I said, I'm from São Paulo, Timo is from Rio de Janeiro. Brazil is a country that's like gigantic, so we don't pretend to talk about or in the name or experience of different comrades, because Brazil has different scenes from anarchism and different kind of struggle. We will try to answer and to show you all what we know, and there are lots of stuff more that we don't know, and we can try to think together. So first thing, anarchism in Brazil starts with the anarchist, with the workers movement. The first the first information that we have on newspapers is from the late 90s, in the 19th century. We have like a mass protest on São Paulo that a worker was shot dead by the police, and his name was Polinice Mattei. He was an Italian anarchist. So in 1898, we have like this first anarchist martyr that were shot in a protest. And after that, the anarchist movement were quite close between the Brazil was the last country on earth that abolished slavery. So when the anarchist movement start to organize, it have not so close relation, but some relation between the anti-slavery movement and anarchism in Brazil. And after that, the workers on the cities, mainly on Rio de Janeiro, São Paulo, but also in Recife, were developing a direct action strategy against the oppression, and Brazil have the worst laws on work since today. So we abolish slavery, but the slavery, it remains as a reality in Brazilian territory. So when we look at this past, the anarchists start with the workers' movement, but at the same time they start like doing a lot of propaganda. So newspapers were spread around Brazil, and also educational and cultural spaces. So I guess this is important for us, because I'm part of an anarchist library. We try to maintain, preserve our memory, and we start to see how the same persons were at the same time doing direct action and trying to develop educational actions. So this inspires us today in the anarchist movement to think about our necessity of doing direct actions, but also to build structures and a cultural imagination that can help people to go beyond the class struggle and find a more constructive perspective of anarchism. So between 1906 to 1920, it was like the develop of anarchism in Brazil very fast. We had like three workers' congress that organized all the class struggle around Brazil. So we have like groups in Belém, that's the capital from Pará on north state, also in Porto Alegre, that is the south part of Brazil. So all around Brazil, they connect themselves, the workers, with newspapers and delegates. So this is a little bit crazy for us in 21st century, that how can they do that with so low structures, but they manage it. So this gives somehow strength to us to think if they could do that, maybe we can imagine ways to do our stuffs. So and during this period, we have like the biggest waves of strikes. In 1917, in São Paulo, starts with another worker that was shot. That he was called José Martinez. It was a Spanish zapatero, a guy that made shoemaker. Yeah, and he was shot dead. And then during, they were protesting against violence on a cotton factory. that were, as almost everywhere when we start to look at anarchist history, begins with women action. So the exploitation of women labor and child labor, and this, the anarchist movement were pushing the against this violence and demanding transformation on the worker structure, on factory structure, and this became like a big revolt, and the anarchists then starts to create some spaces from organize in the neighborhoods the strike. So it becomes in São Paulo and then goes by the railway to the interior from São Paulo, and then after that to Rio de Janeiro, and in 2 weeks it became like national. And this is like everyone, Marxist, anarchist, liberals, puts the beginning of the real workers' movement in Brazil. These days ago, during the 100 years celebration, the Partido dos Trabalhadores, a workers' party, tried to get our history and to appropriate our history and say that, no, this is where all the syndicalism that brings Lula to power begins, and this is fake. There is nothing linked, because the structure of all the strikes in during this period in Brazil, during the First Republic, was mainly organized and acted by anarchists. What happened since then is we have, at the same year, the Russian Revolution, and this became like the Communist Party was trying to, the Russian Communist Party tried to create different parties around the world, giving money and stuff like this. So it also happens in Brazil. The anarchists, some anarchists joined the anarchist part, the Communist Party. It was founded in 1922 by anarchists that were expelled after 2 or 3 years later. So this is all of them they created and then get expelled after that. And this was a big tension, but this is where also we have a tension between historical the history of social movement, because at the same time the communists like to say that anarchists are non-organized. So when a party or a communist party raised, all of the workers go there, and they erase the fact that communist parties start to make alianza, create alliance with the republican structure, and also the brutality of police creating one of the first oppression camps, first prison model on the northeast part of Brazil, especially to the anarchists, that's called Clevelandia. They sent for 10 years illegally thousands of anarchists that were acting in São Paulo, mainly in Rio de Janeiro, there. So when we talk that anarchism lost your power in Brazil during the 20s, we can't look to the history without thinking of it. Why is it important? Because this strategy of oppression, the brutality of police control, steals like our tradition. Actually, after that, we had two dictatorships. One of them is the most well-known. That's the military dictatorship that between 1964 and 1985, so 21 years. But before that, between 1937 and 1945, we had another one that was like Getúlio Vargas dictatorship. And this guy, he creates the labor rights in Brazil, but he also created it based more or less on Carta de Lavoro de Mussolini. So what happened in Brazil during this period is that all the memory structures and syndicalized autonomous groups that used to exist, they were shut down and beaten and go to jail and all the stuff. So we are the last country on earth to abolish slavery. Our republic was made by a contract between the elite. So all the groups that were during the Brazil Empire remains on power and remains with the land. So that's important for us to understand when, during, after the second dictatorship, bring the direct action strategies and the anarchist perspective back was quite hard. What happened at that moment? Brazil had, like, who knows a little bit about the persons that at that moment knows a little bit about different kinds of struggles or May 68, stuff like this, was the sons of bourgeois. The son, so they have like more, I don't know how to say that in English. They an established a rebellion, more statical rebellion than political, and then don't reclaim the anarchist strategies in Brazil. It was not a memory shared. So what happened is the old ones that preserve in locker rooms, on their places, the archive, the memories, they put it together on the oldest anarchist space that we have, that's called Centro de Cultura Social, that this year we celebrate the 90 years from the beginning, so it starts in 1933, and they put it together on a public space, on a house that they rent, so they could try to once again bring the anarchist debate live and try to organize. Between it, the anarcho-punk movement was emerging in Brazil and was very crazy, because they start to with this rebellion spirit and the anarcho-punk influence from the lyrics. They start to get interested in, well, what the fuck is this that we're doing? What is anarchism? And somehow they saw the May 1st demonstrations, and they start to go there and find the old guys. And this got a real singular mix between old ones that one of them fight on Spanish Civil War. So it was like generation very far away one from another, but at the same time it was very rich. So during the 90s in Brazil, we had this scene between the old ones that were more like scholars, or they do like this, meetings and talks, and the anarcho-punks that have like start to making their own spaces, doing the scene, and also joining the protest. So this was the birth of this. And this is crazy, because these days ago, an indigenous from Amazonia, he was on a podcast talking about how he became like an artist, and he said, oh, we start to listen in Amazonia, the tapes, the cassette tapes from bands in Brazil that starts to talk about indigenous movement, and they said, whoa, they are angry as we are, and they talk about us, we exist to them. So we had at the same time, at this moment, as we don't know how to do anarchism, at that moment we try all kinds of strategies, and we're open to mix with groups that normally the left wing didn't saw, because it was not electoral meaningful. The indigenous people, they were there before Brazil were colonized, but they were exterminated. They are less than 5% of Brazilian population officially, so no one cares about them officially. But the anarchist scene start to join, and some with inside university, but mainly were like doing grassroots activities with them, and this gets more intensified in the last 10 years, and this is very cool, so we can try to talk about a little bit of that. But I think the what is common for all of us is that the anti-globalization movement, El Movimiento Altermundista, and the change of 21st century, it was when we got connected really with what was going on here. After that, we start like, as anarchist movement, we start doing the anarchist book fair regularly. Mario, where is Mario? It's a proof that it's a space that can combine different kinds of militancy. It's very plural, and also at the same time we try to do it like more anarchist as we can. So this is what we start after the beginning of 21st century, is try to create spaces, to have places where people can meet, not only on the protests, on the marches, because it's super cool being together, acting, but also we felt like we need to have spaces to share knowledge, to develop practices, and to understand how to make our ideas possible in everyday life, not only in protests. So a lot of spaces were start to appear on São Paulo, and in this, São Paulo is a big metropolis. It has like 12 million persons only in the city, and the metropolis have like 24 million persons, so it's fucking huge. And was important because people who took train on to go to a protest on São Paulo, they start to look at each other and say, whoa, we went at the same demonstration and we are going back to the same place, why don't we organize ourselves around here? And this start to happen, and this was very cool because some spaces start on the periphery of the metropolis, and this gave a more plural perspective also to anarchism in São Paulo, and I guess in Rio were more or less the same. The structures of the city, it's quite different. So Rio de Janeiro, it's in littoral, it has like big hills, and São Paulo is a little bit more flat city, so the periphery in São Paulo is far, far away from the center, and Rio de Janeiro, it's more mixed. And we can try to imagine how this impacts the activity, the actions from social groups, but try to not be so long. What we had then, so was these spaces being created, and the anarchist movement trying to connect with the autonomous groups that were acting. In Brazil, for example, we had in 2013, 10 years ago, one transport rebellion, because the taxes that we pay to go one side to another, they are very high for our incoming. So the minimum wage in Brazil these days, I guess it's like 300 euros, but almost 50% of the population don't have like a safety job, so they don't receive that minimum wage. They calculate it's almost 50% of the population live with half minimum wage. So it's like any rise of transport or food fucks up the people's life. So this is where it started. It's a social discontentment with this rise of transport prices, and the autonomous groups, anarchist groups, were like pushing government against what we were seeing. What we saw at that moment, we had on municipal government in São Paulo, the Fernando Haddad, that is a member of Lula government, the state government, the local state government, was from the right wing, a guy that now is the vice president from Brazil. They were in opposite sides in 2013, but now they are in the same side. so you can understand how the
coalition.
The coalition between center-right and center-left move the center-left to center-right. That's exactly what we're facing in Brazil these days. We had like a polarization between far-right and center-right. There is no opposition on left for real in Brazil these days. So that's important for everyone to know that Lula and the Partido dos Trabalhadores, Workers' Party, these days they are not on left wing. They discourse, you can say it, some small actions you can say it, but the economical, the political decisions, they are almost all of them connected with the interest of center right. They are not under far right, but it's important for us to understand that. And what happened at that moment is, and Dilma was the ex-president that were put it away by the right wing or far right wing in 2016. So the social movement understand that if we want, and not the anarchists, the social movement, if you want to have like a little, a bit more progressive perspective, we have to push governments from the left and from the right. Because it was easy during the 90s, the land occupation from MST, from the Movimento dos Trabalhadores Sem Terra, the landless movement, it was obvious that if you are a left-wing group and you have a right-wing government, you go and beat them and you face the government because you know what you want. But when you have a left-wing government, the government say, oh, come sit, talk to us, we will find a way to help you. And this is bullshit, because the agrarian reform that occurred in Brazil, most of the agrarian reform that we have since the dictatorship were during the right-wing government, because the direct action conquest with agrarian reform, no government in Latin America will give it to the people. The land is the most, and we can talk about ecology and other stuff, but we all know that land these days in this fucking world, it's the most valuable thing that we have, because every time the fucking industry demand something new, and Latin America, we have like a super complex geological structure, so we are being demanded all the time, so no rich people will open hand from it. So what landless movement did in the 90s, they stopped doing, or they minimized it during the Lula government, and this was a huge impact, because at that moment we were imagined that we as society would have go much further than where we get. And this is why the autonomous groups looking at this more traditional Stalinist, because landless movement in Brazil, I'm sorry to say, has a Stalinist structure, that's true. So not all members, but the owners of the landlord group. So during this the second decade from 21st century, the autonomous movement like get more strength. So this in 2013, this action against the taxes, bus taxes, 2015, I guess were more or less like 500 schools in 2 months that were occupied around all Brazil by second grade students, by high school students. They were They were demanding that a shift that government wants to do in the structure of schools that sucks in Brazil, it was going to collapse the relation that the families has on with the school. So they occupy, and they occupy mainly influenced by what happened in 2013, but also we have Chilean comrades here, but also by the occupation in schools since 2006 in Chile. So these networks and these autonomous movement brings at that period, like a share of knowledge that we missed historically, but this open also spaces for us to imagine and try to connect with different kinds of struggles that occurs now on Latin America and imagine how they did it. So it was crazy because we saw on internet, on at the news, official news, like in one day we have one school and then in another day three schools and then nine and then 50 and then 300 schools, like in a week, being occupied, and they remain occupying the schools, I guess, for like almost 2 months. Self-governing the space, doing work with the community, have classes, but classes that they demand and they imagine that that's what school could be. So we were like on a race of youth rebellion, demanding the impossible and acting like it could be possible. And what happened after that is we in Brazil, the economy is not growing that fast as the rich one wanted. So, and government is not taking care of control the youth. So what we're gonna do is take Dilma out and put a right-wing fascist there so everything gets control. That it was more or less simplifying what happened in Brazil. So all this youth and this power and this anger that were being canalized to direct action were in one hand to another merged to electoral debates. So 2018 was like the shittiest moment in Brazil because we had like, okay, you have a fucking fascist and you have like this liberal that is on the workers' party government, and everyone says, okay, it's not time to act, we need to get all the left wing together and all the center together, and even in try to invite the center right, because fascist in power it's will fuck everything up, and that's true. But at the same time, this gets shitty. So when Bolsonaro gets in power, the left wing tries to, the autonomous anarchist left wing tries to make them demos, but the left wing parties said, oh, it's not time, we have to get our pieces from the ground, we have to restructure the left wing, so understand how to face it, because it's a global shit. And yes, it's true, it's a global shit that right wing is growing everywhere, but being outside the streets is not the answer. But they said no, but the streets in Brazil now belongs to right wing, and this is bullshit. So we face it, and then after that we have like the probably one of the worst pandemic experience in the world. We have like almost 1 million persons killed by the shit, by COVID, and Bolsonaro have like a public position that no, that's nothing. No, we have like a problem. It's a silly disease that less than 1% of people that get this shit will die. In Brazil, we have like 5% from persons, that is higher than almost every country in the world, that persons that got COVID, because the in our hospitals, as the public system is very problematic in Brazil, they don't have oxygen. So people could be saved, as the richest one were saved with minimum healthcare, but it was not available. So this makes the people from favelas, from that was not accessing to minimum healthcare, to try to go back to the streets and do protests. So this made like was the turning point of this rearticulation from social anarchist direct action. We saw many comrades in different parts of Brazil doing like this kitchen, communitary kitchens, and going to houses that faced people that couldn't go out because was some why any context. So this was one moment that I guess changed a little bit the perspective. What, oh, we can do nothing. Oh yes, we can do. We can produce or make food for those that can access in this moment. The taxes of hungry in Brazil, they grow up very fast. In Brazil, these days ago, at least 20% of population it's in a hunger condition. So it's very high. We eliminate it decades ago, but now it goes back again. And as anarchist movement, we at the moment rearrange more close than these territorial actions. I guess Timo can talk because I talk a lot. Thank you. We are many Brazilians, so we're
no have space for all of us. Good afternoon, my name is Julio, and I'm from Rio de Janeiro as well. And I would like to also contribute a little bit with the historic rise from the anarchism in Brazil, especially stress out one point that is really important for us that came from poor neighborhoods and from black family. And because when you talk about the history of slavery in Brazil, there's a lot of misunderstandings, and especially regarding slavery. When our ancestors who were enslaved, they were treated as brutal animals. They didn't have a conscience. They weren't realizing what was happening with them. They didn't have a capacity to organize themselves. And this is a discourse which was ensured by this colonial perspective, which brings for us the epistemicity of our culture. It means that we are not able or capable to develop any kind of knowledge because we are not even perceived as a human beings. So this dehumanization of black people also wiped from the story the whole of the black people in the anarchist movement as well. Because before of the Italians and the Germans and Europeans in general flee to Brazil because of they were starving also here in Europe. And then at that time, we had a lot of organization from slaves. We had in some research that proves in 1840 something, even before 1848, when they have the spring of the people here in Europe, we had strikes in farms made from slaves. They were organizing themselves and they realized, okay, we won't work for you. I know you bought me as a property, but I don't recognize myself as a property. I'm a human being, I have my will, and we don't want to do this. So if you want for me that I work for you, I would like to negotiate. I would like to negotiate my life condition here. I want to have access to land. I want to decide who I can marry or not. So this kind of situation happened a lot in Brazil. So when you talk about slavery there, we must also to reflect about the agents of black people, that it always happened, but the white history and the official history always tried to erase this from the story. And I would like to point out also we had one historical activist in Brazil in the abolitionist movement. Abolitionist movement was a political movement which fought against the slavery institution in Brazil. And this political movement was ensured by a lot of black and mestizos. Mestizo is me, like him. We are mixed with white and black. because, for instance, my mother was a white woman and my father is a black man. So we, in general, in Brazil, we are like this mixed or black, or few of them are white. What happened with us was these people, they had the protagonism of the movement, but the official history put it away. So one guy called José do Patrocínio, he was running a newspaper in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro, and then he wrote a lot of articles regarding self-organizement, about the autonomy, about confederalism, and of course against slavery. And he signed, his pseudonym was Proudhon. So before a lot of anarchist immigrants flee to Brazil, we had black people. This guy, this dude, he was black. He was son of enslaved woman. So he was reflecting about this. He was writing about this. So what I'd like to say is this. We have also our own heritage of political organization, that we didn't need the anarchist movement goes to Brazil, enlightened us. So what happened was kind of intertuned will. So we just dialogue in the same perspective as we are here now. We cannot say that we all of us here share the same perspective of anarchism, but there are some principles that all of us are agreed. We all of us here are anti-authoritarian, are anti-sexist, are anti-capitalist. So these principles, we are agreed. And how you do this is a question of a method, and then we can discuss about this later. I just would like to stress out this point. Yeah, he just remember to talk about Quilombo, but we talk about this tomorrow. Tomorrow at 2, and then we talk specifically about this.
He was talking about tomorrow at 2 in the afternoon in the co-working space. We'll talk a little bit more about favela, Quilombo perspective, grassroots resistance in Rio. So I think today we're talking a little more on anarchism specifically, or from an anarchist perspective. And tomorrow we can talk a little bit more about the lived reality and all that. Just so you understand where I come from in the sense of what I do and how I build my view on the aspects I will share to you. I live in a big favela neighborhood in Rio, in the northern zone. It's called Maré. And I live there since 2008. So it's been 15 years now. And we formed a small collective. It's called Hossa, which is like countryside, because we kind of connect to small farmers and we kind of try to bring agroecology to the urban periphery. And there's a quite strong agroecological movement in Rio and a quite strong network around these issues, and also different works in different favelas. And at the same time, I've been organizing as anarchists in different, like I was part of FARJ, which was like a specialist anarchist organization. It still is, but there has been some reorganizing issues around it. I am not part of it anymore for some time, otherwise it would have given me lots of headaches. But I mean, that's something we could talk about at some point, about this specialist current of anarchism in Latin America, Uruguay, Brazil being the main countries. But I'm part of this Institute for Libertarian Studies, where we do propaganda. Okay, we just put things online, we interview people from different historical periods. We had an online seminar on dialectics. We went from Marx to Hegel to go to Proudhon. So it was kind of like a way to interest people that would never hear about Proudhon and dialectics, to see if they get to know dialectics in Proudhon, if we talk first about Hegel and Marx. So my experience with anarchism in Brazil is always from this favela, like urban periphery perspective. And I think one, like trying to look a little bit more about contemporary issues on anarchism in Brazil, sharing a small, like a short story actually on the 2013 protests. In a global sense, the way I read it from Brazil is, I think the 2013 protests in Brazil, they kind of were the last big event of the cycle of global struggles we had, going from Occupies, the Arabian Spring, we had Chile, we had different strikes, and then it comes to Brazil, and the protests in Brazil, they refer a lot to symbolic and material experiences of these other protests. It was like there were, you know, people talking about this will become Chile, or this will become Turkey, this will become Greece. It was like really connected when people were in the streets it felt really connected when we were in the streets 2013. And then it's a little bit of a funny issue sometimes, because there comes this black bloc issue up in Brazil. People start to defend themselves in the streets as black blocs. So this is something like, if you go to a European context, you would say, okay, the 80s and autonomous and stuff like that. And then it kind of comes up. And the fun part about it for me was, we were in one of the protests, and at that time I was organized as an anarchist, and we were there with our small group from the favela. Geandra, she's part of our collective. And then we were in this, it was a protest that was kind of dominated by unions, like the reformist unions and stuff, but there was these young guys organizing as black bloc, and then they all came by, it was like 100 people or something, and they were like, "Wow, so yeah," and they were running up and trying to defend the demo or whatever what black blocs would do in the streets. And then my companion Jandra, she looked at me and said, "I always thought you were the only anarchist." Like, it's really literally, until 10 years ago, anarchism was not known among people in the peripheries, and there's obviously ideological reasons for it. If you go to Latin America and you think a bit about what is the repertoire of like resistance, and how where does it drink from, you know what I mean? And then you have to point to the importance of the Cuban Revolution, and you have to point to experiences where the authoritarian left always is the reference, okay? So, and then if you think about education at urban periphery, you have to talk about the forms political groups organized to try and work with education, critical education, and one of these tools is, and that has been applied by all kinds of different political currents, is kind of give these classes to help people to get access to universities. Because in Brazil you have a general test in all of Brazil once a year, and then it depends on the points you get in this test if you can get access to university or not. So when you come from a public school, you have very hard time to have a good test result. So they are like preparation classes for this. It's called ENEM, and then you spend 1 year. You do it at the urban periphery. Say, look, we have a class for you. We help you prepare for this access test. And this is where you do politics. And of course, the black movement does it. The left authoritarian do it, and anarchists do it. So whatever kind of group you're part from, you will obviously kind of work differently the issues. I mean, you have to prepare people to pass well on the test. That's one thing. But then, of course, you will work and talk politics with these people. And in favelas in Rio, like the left groups that did this kind of stuff until 2013, that would never even have mentioned the word anarchism in the classroom. When they were talking about resistance and social movement, they would be talking about MST. If they would talk about ideology among social movements, they would talk about Marxism-Leninism, yeah, which is kind of like the main structuring element of the big social movements in Brazil. It's like the, what's it called in English, centralized democratic centralism. Yeah, that's the idea of centralismo democrático, né? Since 2013, we really have kind of like this facility, you know, like in terms of anarchists and stuff, the fact anarchists exists has become known. It had 2013 has influenced a lot different resistance experiences at the urban peripheries. Mm-hmm.
No, just to say that we organized the anarchism book fair in 2013 was absurd, because a lot of young persons came in. and we maintain it until 8 p.m. the activities, and were people getting there excited, so we were really really on a different perspective on anarchism at these days.
So what we have at that time, and that's interesting, is people kind of from the urban peripheries, they go to the protests, they get in touch with like political currents, ideological currents, and then they kind of go back to the neighborhoods and do start to get involved in a different way. Like André is a big example of that. And what's also interesting is, and that's really important, they pass by anarchism, but they will not necessarily stay with anarchism. And that's very good, because if you're from an urban periphery in Brazil and you have a black or indigenous background or a small farmer's background, whatever, if you go in search for identifying moments in history and identifying ideas, you don't necessarily find them in anarchism. You can find them also in anarchism, but you will go back to Quilombola resistance, you will get to reconnect to indigenous resistance. So I think that's kind of how we relate to anarchism in Brazil, or how we should relate. Of course, I'm talking from a favela perspective about anarchism. It's kind of like one possibility from within a current that was formed after the capital work relation had already won, okay? It had already taken over social relations in Europe. And one thing that's interesting about it, and just to follow, to finish this idea, and when we talk about black and indigenous resistance, it's kind of like they are resistances and they drink from inspirations that antecede the work capital relation. And we still see and feel this, that this is alive. When we talk about indigenous territories in Brazil and that they are defending themselves, they are not necessarily defending themselves against capital. They are defending themselves against the work-capital relation. I don't know if that makes sense to you, what I'm saying. It's like, okay, we don't want to be workers. Yeah, it's not like, okay, now that we are workers, let's organize, and the best way to organize is anarchism. It's like, no, we don't want to be workers, okay? So that's kind of how I would say we relate as anarchists to this richness and diversity of struggle and resistance in Latin America. Okay, if we drink from these sources in terms of we already were workers, it's like then anarchism probably is the most interesting way to dialogue, because we don't want to be vanguard, we don't want to tell you how you should do it, and we just want to be part of it. And one thing was that is interesting. Recently, I looked into the farmers' wars in Europe in the 15th and 16th century, and their reivindications at the time. I don't know if you have looked into this at some point, but it's really interesting, because when you read like the list of what they were saying, what they need, it's not very different from what indigenous people say nowadays about what they need. They say, look, we need access to the forest, we need access to water and fishing. And that's kind of showing like a little bit of a difference, you know, like how capitalist relations took over in Europe very, very early, of course. And then you have colonization and globalization. And it's kind of like all overlapping in Latin America. Things are not decided yet. I mean, Quijano is one of these authors, he would bring this also. He's always talk about how many different kind of relations of exploration kind of are coexisting, and there are still examples of work similar to slavery work relations that are always discovered and revealed nowadays. One of the last examples was in the vine production in southern Brazil, where actually lots of internal migrants from Bahia were working under near slavery work conditions. Okay, so that would be a little bit about like over the last years in terms of anarchism. I think it's an interesting dynamic, and it's all very mixed up. And of course, when we talk about Latin America, we talk about anarchism that is open to social movement and wants to be part of social movement. We talk about or not autonomy, of course, because like I think the common denominator of like synergy and where things kind of flow together is, okay, we have to struggle for local territorial autonomy, and we have to connect struggles that do this kind of, like let's say, follow this kind of perspective. So it's not like reinventing the, how do you say, the wheel. Of course, it's for many decades that big groups struggle for autonomy in Latin America. Zapatism is still a very huge and important reference, the Mapuche in Chile. And we have other groups. And then I think the indigenous movement in Brazil is passing through a very interesting moment. It's getting much more visibility. And you have, in a way, connection between perspectives of struggle that don't necessarily pass through dialogue with government. Of course, as all oppressed groups, the biggest portion also of the indigenous groups, they work with this perspective. There's a big camp every year in Brasilia where all indigenous groups come to Brasilia and they pressure the government. But there are also indigenous groups, they don't go to Brasilia. They say, look, we have to defend our territory here, and we have like big landowners near us, and we need physical material resistance, and we need to make that work. And that's kind of the approach of the Teia dos Povos, which is a people's network that started in Bahia and Maranhão 12 years ago, and they didn't know from each other. They were kind of connecting these resistances that kind of struggle in an autonomous perspective, and then they discovered each other and said, well, we kind of have the same idea, we work kind of the same way, and let's connect. And that's how they kind of founded the idea of the Teia dos Povos. And over the last 4 years, it has gone to other states. So we've been building it up in Rio over the last year and a half. It's in Sao Paulo, Rio Grande do Sul. It's in Pernambuco, Ceará. So this is kind of, and then I finish my part also, I think we go to dialogue and questions. But just to kind of reconnect to the idea of understanding what political currents get much visibility in Latin America, and how little libertarian anarchist thought and practice maybe is known, there was a lack opening up, exactly for what you said. In the 90s, there was confrontation of the big social movements. Let's say there was ideological difference of how to organize within a social movement, but there was a very strong synergy in terms of who to confront and how to confront. So let's occupy land. And that's how anarchists have been working in Brazil. It's not so much about, do you think the same way I do? It's much more about, can we do something together that strengthens your struggle? And I also can be part of it, and we bring our ideas forward as well. And the lack that opened up was kind of, okay, the big social movements, they have, with Lula in prison, yeah, and then kind of the right, extremist right-wing manners of being elected and whatever, it was kind of like they softened their relation to the PT, we want to re-elect Lula project. There was no two possibilities anymore in terms of, okay, we support it, but we also confront it. It was kind of like the confrontation side was getting weaker and weaker. So it was kind of like a closed horizon for anybody who works with a libertarian perspective in Brazil. It felt really like, okay, where do we go? There was no collective sense of collective connectivity. Okay, there's hope in this sense or in that sense. Kind of like, okay, the social movements we already don't necessarily identify with ideologically, they are getting weaker. There's no alternative, and what we are doing is very small, and we don't really feel that it's connected too much. And I think the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years, this alternative has gained some strength. You know, it's like, okay, let big movements do what they want to do, and we're not against them, of course, because they struggle for what we agree with. But we are strong enough now to connect territories and get to know groups, gather in meetings. Things are in an interesting dynamic, and of course the pandemic with all its impacts, we're kind of still getting out of the pandemic in a way. But that adds up to the richness maybe of the diversity right now. In a sense, in Brazil at least, we all feel a little bit as survivors. I mean, you probably do that too, but we forget that very quickly. But I mean, we are survivors of a pandemic. So it's kind of like we're regrouping as survivors of the pandemic. And during the pandemic, the social movements necessarily, they were very locally focused, right? We had to take care of surviving locally. How do we organize, economically organize? The favelas were mainly locations of lots of solidarity, articulations, food baskets, giving them out and stuff like that. So there was lots of things going on, and now we are kind of like, okay, how can we build up constantly from the last years? And yeah, I think that was kind of like a little bit the idea of a contemporary and complementary panorama. And I think we should dialogue now, give us our opinions and ask questions and so on. Thanks.
So?
We can try to like three questions and dialogue.
The same.
Sorry. All right. So my question is like a shorter version would be, what obstacles do you see now for like spreading the for the anarchist movement growing and being like more efficient in organizing? And so like to expand it, is it like the right wing that are like preventing you from organizing? Is it the authoritarian left that is like occupying the space? Is it the fact that, I don't know, like you come from the middle class and like everybody else is poor and like you cannot connect? So it's like, you know, can you like give a little bit more like what challenges you right now as and prevents you from growing more?
Hi, thank you so much for your talk. I've got two questions. The first would be, I would be interested to learn about the level of repression that you face in your work, because I imagine it to be like more intense than, say, in Germany. And the second would be, if you see potential for collaboration in struggles like cross-continent. I'm thinking of a campaign we're starting with indigenous activists in Colombia against coal mines. The coal mining there, where the coal is exported to Germany, and we are in conversation to block coal power stations here to help their struggles over there. And I wanted to learn if you see potential for collaboration across continents.
What's Western our aggression?
Yes, I just wanted to ask if there is, like in many other countries all over the world, like anarchists sometimes try to have, like as a part of also their like historical and social references, like so-called like social banditism. And like, so I wonder if in Brazil, if you have, or as anarchists or historically, there was also like kind of positive or rather negative about like cangaceiros, for example.
Thanks for the questions. I will try. Obstacles, I guess, connects with the second question. We have in Brazil military police. This is something, I guess, not every country shared this. We have like Guarda Civil, we have like a local police that supposedly don't use violence, and the military police, that's like, we were talking yesterday about anti-militarism and stuff like this, and it's quite the same in Brazil. Our police in São Paulo do exercise works on Israel with Israeli police, and we use our weapons to against demonstrators, our army, our bombs, gas bombs, and other kinds of weapons that we buy from Israel. So this is a little, and during the Partidos, during PT, worker government in the first decade of 21st century, we have the biggest incarcerment. Yeah? Prison rating in the world. We now are the third biggest prisoners in world, behind USA and China. So, and we are growing quickly. So it's a little bit fucked up. These days in Brazil, we have like we don't have like debate, or official debate around drugs themes, so the police can say without any proof that you are a drug dealer, and if you are young and black, you will be charged as a drug dealer, and the judge don't need any proof to put the persons on jail. So this is what we are facing these days in Brazil, and this is like one perspective, the police brutality, the increase of imprisonment. So this is one thing. The other part, we have like the churches, the neo-Pentecostal churches that was bring to Brazil during the 80s, and they have a big power, a political and economical power. The churches in Brazil, they are not taxed, so they don't pay nothing to exist, and they demand money, lots of money. So if anyone knows Igreja Universal do Reino de Deus, have seen one of the shit church that began in Brazil and now it's all over the world, they are yeah. So this, they have newspaper, they have TV, they have internet channels, and they are inside government. So we have like on the congressmen, a big part of the congressmen are founded by the churches. So the far right on Brazil is racist, is conservative on values, and I guess they have lots of strength to try to make invalid all social demands. What we faced, for example, in 2013 is, if you get, and this is very crazy, all the editorials from newspapers and TV programs, they were saying like, okay, they are black blocs, they are destroying our cities, police, you are allowed to do whatever you need. And literally they said that. But what happened is, as was very mediatic, lots of journalists from these newspapers went there and they got shot, and I guess two of them lost the view, because the police in Brazil don't actually use the procedement, and they shoot in their faces, not to the ground, or not to disperse the persons. So, and this together with the interest of the far right to get more power, they changed the official discourse against the riot in Brazil, and they start to, okay, they are demanding not only the yeah, one reporter died during the demo, so it became like useful to them. So I guess we have like at least this kind of obstacles today: the police brutality, the political structure that is dominated by far right, and we have like this ideological common sense vinculated to religious proto-fascist groups in Brazil. So this, I guess, could be a possible answer. Every debate that we try to do against or publishing our ideas, it's always confronted on official discourse, and they have much more power than we do. the possibilities to collaborate between different continents. I guess this, it's always possible. We are internationalists, so yes, we try to imagine and think actions like this. It's important to us because, for example, the indigenous movement in Brazil these days and the Quilombolas movement, it's connected directly to land actions of boycott, for example, foreign companies. They can be very useful. For example, in 2013, the PT government, they built one of the biggest dams that we have in Brazil in an indigenous area. The indigenous movement have lots of direct actions against this structure, and the Margem Grande do Rio, that's the biggest course from the Rio Xingu. In this place, an Canadian mining company, they have this land, and this is a well-known land of gold. So without the water there, with the dam, they now have less work to mining gold and send the gold to Canadian. So all of the fights that the indigenous movement is fighting today is to combat the exportation of soy to Europe, but mainly to China. That's the country that buys more soy from Brazil. And I guess as it's going on Bolivia, Chile, that mining to lithium, the impact of this kind of new business fucks up the life from persons that normally were trying to live in their territory and remain and resist this obstacle. So I guess, yes, we can connect the struggles and imagine how these struggles can affect the Brazilian economy, because I guess this is one thing. My teacher in the university, Larissa Bombardi, she now lives as a refugee in Brazil and in Brussels, in Belgium, because she studied the impacts of agrotoxin in Brazil territory. And it's crazy because the chemistry factories that produce the agrotoxin, it's European, and they are not allowed to sell the shit that they sell there, and they sell thousands of agrotoxin. That's not a pesticide, it's agrotoxin, because the shit is toxic and kills lots of persons on our territory, and act against these enterprises and demand that these enterprises and governments are not allowed to continue fucking up our territory. It's build this kind of collaboration that's so important for the different struggles in Brazil. Timo, go ahead.
Okay. I'm thinking how to start. I think I will start with the second question first. Level of repression we face in our work. The repression that you will suffer from when you do involve with or live at an urban periphery in Brazil is a repression that is against the territory and the people that live in it. It's not against someone who is anarchist or someone who is this or that. That's the first thing. Then, of course, once it reaches the territory, it will still differentiate. Okay, you're a long black man, then you're a lot more in danger to suffer from police violence. Then let's say people knock at my door and they see a white man, and policemen would knock at my door and they will be aggressive, but they would not beat me, for example. But if I, you know, if it was a young man in my place, they would beat him up or whatever. So the repression that is faced in favelas, it is constant and it is very generalized. We have in Rio four groups of that execute violent territorial control. We have the militia, they are kind of paramilitary groups. We have the military police, we have the military, and we have the drug gangs. And the thing is, it's not so easy to talk very short about these issues because it of course needs some attention when we talk about it, not to reproduce stigma as well on favelas and, for example, on the drug gangs. The drug gangs, they have an economic relation to the state. They rent favela territory. And state wants the drug gangs to rent favela territory. That's how police gets illicit money. And the military police internally is structured around money. Like, if you have a career and you are well with your commander, he will put you in a post where you can make lots of illicit money. That means, okay, you will have a round to do where you can get security money from bakery store because you park your car in front of it when they count the money and all this kind of stuff. And in terms of the favela territories, they extort money from the drug gang. The drug gangs extort this money from the favela inhabitants. It's kind of mafia structures where we pay extra on drinking water, on gas to cook, on TV, on internet. We don't have alternative what internet to use, for example. Like, if you ask me what's like the most fucked up thing I have to do with my daily life is I don't have internet access that works well. And I don't have an alternative because there is not, you only have one who offers it in our favela. I can go to a different company. It's just one company and it's in their hands in a way. And of course, militia is much more dangerous because there you don't have the middleman, you know, they do it directly. The paramilitaries in the urban peripheries, they are directly recruit from the police, former policemen, and so on. So it's kind of, and I think this brings in a little bit the idea of anarchism and obstacles for it, or like radical resistance. It's much more difficult to organize in a favela where you have paramilitaries than it is in a favela where you have drug gangs. Because the drug gangs, the young guys, they are from the favela, their young brothers and sisters or their kids, they, you know, participate in our movie activity with children and stuff. So we have a dialogue, we know them, we know who they are there in daily life. Of course, military police, I don't even have to talk about this idea. In terms of like the continuous idea of leading with repression, it's kind of part of daily life. Yeah, every day you wake up and it might be a helicopter or not, and there might be this tank car, it's called Caveirão, like big skull. This car actually here. Huh? Yeah. They park them near our neighborhoods, like in the main highways, just to show the people who drive by, you are safe. I don't know what from, right? So, Yeah. Well, the elite unit of the military police, it's called BOPI. I think many people have seen these, maybe the movies on these topics, but they actually have like prep songs to prepare for operations where they reinforce the idea that their job is to go into the favela and leave dead people on the ground. That's kind of like how they do it. And actually, the neo-Pentecostal religion, it's crossing the police, like there are some sects within the police. The last time they visited like our place, the one of the policemen, he had this big ring, this size more or less, golden, and it was like the symbol of the death, you know, and it was also a weapon, right? And they kind of carry 15 different tools to kill. It's like crazy. You look at them, you don't even know what to be afraid of. It's the big weapon or the knife here, the knife there, the knife in the shoe. It's completely crazy. But they would never, for example, confront anarchism directly. Like if they see books in your bookshelf and they are anarchist, why are they in your house? I mean, they go in, they don't ask. They would just kind of, okay, books. You know what I mean? 2013, when the protests were, that was a short moment where anarchism was in the vision even of police repression, but it's not in general sense, because, and that's where the idea of dangerous classes comes in. I mean, Brazilian elite is not worried about anarchism. I'm sorry, why would they? I mean, you know, it's not dangerous to them. They are worried about popular classes. They are worried about black resistance. They are worried about the favelas rising up. And I think we can go back to 2013, because when the peripheries get more and more involved in the protests, that's when we have a chacina in the Maré. Chacina is a mass killing. It's exactly because there was a protest near the Maré favelas, and it had to be repressed in a different way, because if the peripheries would get really involved, you know what I mean? Like taking the streets, it can't happen. So that's when there were 13 people were killed, and it was like a whole night of, it was a very terrible moment for the memory of the Maré. And that's kind of when the spread out of the protests, it ceased down completely, because of course when you face the death directly, it's a little bit tougher to take the streets the next day. And in terms of obstacles for anarchism, I think there are lots of internal obstacles. Yeah, like I said, it's anarchist. You don't have to be like directly afraid, oh, the police will knock, and since I'm anarchist, they will beat me up or something. When I say internal obstacles, it's kind of about how to relate to social struggle. I think we have some currents of anarchism in Brazil. They are very much into disputing with the other currents of authoritarian left, and I think that's just a waste of energy, because these currents, they are not so much about doing. So I prefer to be where they are not, and then I don't even have to deal with them. Yeah, and the kind of struggles they have amongst themselves, I sometimes joke, you don't need to read a book that was written after 1930 to understand what they are fighting about, because it's kind of like, it seems a little bit stuck in history sometimes. So it's about, let's be where people are struggling, where stuff is done. And if I, for example, our most inspiring partner in the Rio favela, their influence is Maoist, Marxist, Leninist, Quilombolist, and indigenous. Okay? So, but we are not even, it's not a worry when we work together. It's what can we do together? How can we strengthen what we do? And they talk about collectivist economies. They talk about autonomy. They have a self-financing mechanism for the community, and the exchange is very live. Okay, so I think for anarchism to get stronger in Brazil, it would be kind of like if it is in the background. It's not a foreground. Of course, we need the moments of an anarchist book fair. We need the moment of where we can meet. That's always important. It's kind of like where you go, strengthen yourself and stuff, like this meeting. But it's kind of like when you go to the places, I mean, hardly ever I tell somebody I'm an anarchist. You know what I mean? It's not about that. It's about, what do you think? What can we do here? How can we do it? And let's try and forward with our goals in terms of social struggle. And then I think that links a little bit to cross-continent possibilities. Of course, the ideal is to do as much as possible. But it's really a difficulty in terms of scarcity of energy and time. You know what I mean? It's like we know very little about Sao Paulo. If I sit down with, and we could talk nights and nights just so we get to know Rio, Sao Paulo reality. And then if I go to the Western Zone in Rio, I sit down nights with the people there, because there's militia and there's different context than what we have in our favela. So usually, and maybe that's something we could maybe try to get something more general out of it. From the peripheral perspective, what is the problem? Is when proposals come, but very little substantial support to make the proposal happen. Yeah, great, let's interact, let's exchange, whatever. If you tell me, look, we want to connect a mining, you know, like mining, to coal and mining in different places, and you say you send someone from Germany who will spend half a year with the people there so it can work. It would work in terms of, because then you have someone who can do the communication. Because local, we struggle. We're not able to, you know, it's a time issue in a way, energy issue. So I think it's always about choices. The last year we have been very busy about participating in the construction of the Teia dos Povos, which is this network in different states and stuff. And we have been very little able to advance locally what we do. And I mean, what we do locally is like a movie night with 20 kids. And sometimes we just don't, we're not able to do it. And it hurts, you know what I mean? And then I think that's something you will face everywhere where you are politically active also. We are not so many that involve in the mid and long-term perspective. But then I think in terms of this cross-continent, I think a lot about knowing about what each other is doing is already worth a lot. And giving visibility to what happens in the second line, you know, that's not so visible, that's not so the pop topic of resistance or whatever, I think that helps too. Okay, and now I have the last question, social banditism and cangaceiros. It's not, I mean, it's obviously a great topic. there is, in a way, a positive reference to these kind of experiences, but I wouldn't say it goes deep and is widely known or something like that. And I think other companions from Brazil can even answer better that question. I don't know if you want to say something about it, but I think it's kind of there, and there is an awareness. When I talk to you about the social movement, they mix Maoist, Quilombolist, Marxist-Leninist influences. They studied a lot these experiences in Brazil that involve social banditism, but they also involve like kind of a mystical element, like people following Padre Cicero or something like that, you know, like, and kind of as such resisting to state authority, because, and that's once again something where I find it connects to the farmers movement in the 15th and 16th century in Europe, because it was a lot about mystical figures as well. So it's kind of, I mean, it's interesting to kind of make these connections sometimes, but it's not something that's completely like widely known or shared or whatever. Okay, and then to, I think just to, yeah. I think that's about the questions that were so far, and then we open for new questions. Yeah.
Yo tenía unas preguntas muy puntuales. Sí, antes dijiste de empresas europeas que están envenenando básicamente los territorios en Brasil, si sabías los nombres, por ejemplo, de algunas empresas. Lo mismo imagino que está pasando con la extracción del litio que nombraste. Y otra pregunta era si hay experiencia de compañeros anarquistas que están trabajando hacia un discurso anticarcelario, o sea, de todas formas, todo el tema de los presos también comunes es algo que se está, bueno, se te interesa, se está viviendo, se, hay algún contacto, se circulan alguna clase de revista de las cárceles brasilianas. Y si queréis podéis contestar en inglés. Gracias.
Did you understand that question? Okay. The two questions, it was first if they know the names of the European companies that are extracting a lot in Brazil, especially lithium, and the second one, if there are people, comrades working in the against prisons fight with the not political prisoners, the others, the norm social, okay.
My first question would be if you could repeat the name of the network you mentioned, and maybe write it down somewhere. Thanks. But I have a second question. If you also work like with like syndicates or groups that work with workers' rights. Because, for example, a friend of mine told me that they're like about a mine that is now like owned collectively, and like they changed their working conditions. And it for me it seemed like a new approach also to extractivism. Like, of course, it would be better if like the natural resources wouldn't be used, but we like live in capitalism, so this will not happen soon. And to me, it seemed like a good step on the way to come, or yeah, to maybe to change like the new colonial structures that still exist in the economic. Whatever, you know what I mean.
Hi, thanks for the talk. I came a little bit late, so maybe you already talked about this a little bit, and you've talked about it a little bit indirectly. But I am interested in if you can say anything more about the anarchist groups in Brazil. I know it's a huge country and, you know, different places, and you might be at a bit of a distance, but what they are doing in general, if there's any, I know it's, you're saying they're fighting with each other, but are any of them doing something interesting or coming up with interesting theories or strategies that you find maybe a bit more interesting to talk about? And you talked about Farage as well, and it'd be interesting to know what is happening, because their especismo stuff is really popular around the world, and including where I'm from in New Zealand. And the second question is, do anarchists have a role with, I know this is in the countryside and you're both maybe more urban, but with land occupations, with the MST, for example, or in the Amazon with land grabbing, is there any anarchists involved in this struggle, or do you have anything to say about that struggle as well, and if it relates in any way to struggles in the city as well? You talked about agroecology and the suburbs, so maybe there's some connection there with the MST or other groups doing occupations. Thank you.
Another 2 hours?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, another two?
So, the companies, the names, I don't have them fresh on my mind now. I'm a little bit tired, and they are like this, but they are these agro, these pesticide companies. I was looking, Larissa, this teacher that I have that's exiled in Brussels, she published an online atlas between the connections between pesticide agrotoxin in Europe and Latin America, and there she have like all the what's the main companies, where it's from, the laws in Europe and in Brazil, and how they manage to produce in Europe and Central Brazil, and how the money flows, and how pesticides or agrotoxins flow. So after the talk, if you want, I have an internet now, so I can share with you or with everyone who wants this atlas or the link where you can access the PDF. So it's quite easy to understand the dimension of our problem. So this is one thing. The anti-prison movement in São Paulo, for example, we during the 90s we had like Anarchist Black Cross. We had like groups that were active, but nowadays we don't have like an anarchist collective, as I know, acting. But we have like some ex-prisoner groups there that have anarchists on it. So, and I'm part from an collective called Biblioteca Terra Livre, Free Earth Library, and two of our comrades in the library took part on Amparar. That's a community that or a collective created by the families from the prisoners to support, to demand legal and do direct action. So acting, for example, in Brazil, the visits to the prisoners are very, as occurs on Belarus, are it exposes the families to shame process. Sometimes they have to be naked in front of a police officer to visit their parents or the family. So we have like a lot of police abuse on this kind of stuff, and the anarchists in São Paulo, but I imagine in other parts, they try to, as Timo was telling, try to join and push and together these kind of actions. So during the pandemic also in the prisons in Brazil, the highest taxes from contaminations occur in prisons of COVID. So it was like trying to bring masks or stuff that could help prisoners to have a little possibility of surviving prison. So we don't have a specific collective anymore, but we have this kind of action. That's interesting because I guess this is something that I told at the beginning of the talk that I have been with other comrades in 2012 here, and the anarchists around Europe, they were like demanding us somehow to create an anarchist federation because that could happen, but somehow this kind of structure, we don't have it that can be useful, but this is not how anarchists these days or in the last 20 years organize itself in Brazil, because we have like some specific groups, but we have much more persons that reivindicate themselves as anarchists, but they are not preoccupied of being in an anarchist collective exclusive. So this is something, I guess, in for Europe reality, a little bit messy, but that's what we have. And we try. I'm part of this collective, anarchist Biblioteca Terra Livre. I took part also in organization of Anarchist Book Fairs of São Paulo, and editorial projects, different, and a podcast. And we try to spread how are the possibilities of anarchism, not our own possibility. So it's we know that we had a lot of strikes and or a lot of fights inside the movement, but we understand also that it's important to have specific groups, but also don't put all our energies on it, because as Timo was telling and myself, we have too much problems to face at the same time. So as Kropotkin would say, each one to its possibility, to anyone accord their necessities. So we try to be generous with our comrades, but as the comrade asked, in Brazil, a part of the anarchist movement start to reclaim the tradition of anarchist federation from Uruguay, that during the dictatorship in Uruguay were the only big anarchist group that active make some resistance to dictatorship. In the other countries, it was impossible. This and the movement were much more had already collapsed as a movement. There were groups, but not a group. But the thing on specificism to us is that our collective is not specifist, so we understand that we are using the same recipe that occurred during a dictatorship and trying to be focused on strategy or a discourse about strategy that most of the time didn't realize what it is supposed to do. So you have all the tools to act, but you don't have a structure. People, groups, lots of groups coordinate so to act like this. So it's like, as Timo was telling, it's like it seems, I'm not going to be vulgar, it seems a little bit like a vanguard. So it's a beautiful speech, it's a popular speech, but myself, for example, I saw Teia dos Povos, that this articulation that's not anarchist, much more active and powerful then the Specifista movement, anarchista Specifista movement in Brazil, because they are not planning a strategy of organization based on platformism. They are looking to the people, listening to the people, creating a federation that connect people that are more or less ideological connected with anarchism, but have principles that we can say, well, this is in our Latin perspective libertarian, because I know libertarian in English, it's a big problem, it's a messy concept, but in Latin America it's left wing, so it's have all libertarian perspectives. So I guess, yeah, I'm not gonna talk more.
I think there's a book, it can circulate, so it has the name Teia dos Povos on it, and just on the name, it's like it would be network of peoples, povos, and then it's always this idea, okay, what does people or peoples mean in a Latin American context? But that would mean indigenous groups, quilombolist groups, it would mean urban peripheries, favelas, small farmers, traditional fishermen, whatever, yeah, and these connect through the idea of a teia. Teia is actually the spider's web, so it could be a web or a net. And on syndicalism, I would definitely be at the 8 o'clock chat of anarcho-syndicalists tonight, because we are part of a small free union, very very small in Rio. But as this small union, and in terms of other unions as well, one relation from social movement to the unions is to seek support when we want to realize an event. For example, we did this festival recently. We write them a letter and say, look, we'll have a festival, we need some support. And then we know some of the unions, they have relation to us, long-term relations. Maybe we have a few anarchists spread through the different unions, and then they will give us 200 francs or whatever and say, look, you can buy food for the people that help realize the festival or something. It's an interesting and important concept, because that way we realize work where usually people only finance through NGO idea or through a charity idea. Okay, so that's why it's important for us to have this relation to unions. And you were talking about like transforming work processes into self-managed processes. It's not really on the rise in Brazil at the moment. I mean, you're talking about high unemployment, destructuring of work processes, and many people go into micro entrepreneurship, right? Like I'm my own boss and this kind of stuff, like completely. And that's very NGO pushed and promoted too at the peripheries. So in general, the big unions, they are very, I mean, it's not different in other places, you know, they are very linked to the government, to the PT party and stuff. And processes in a larger scale of collective economies are very, very difficult to realize, I think. I think what works better is small units, like small collectives, and they interact. It would be popular family community economy, maybe something like that. That works quite well, and it works naturally for many people. I mean, they just group up as a family, open a small shop, and try to survive, while maybe one has a job outside of the local territory and might lose it at any point. So that's why you kind of have this double strategy. Okay, and then the questions from the comment from New Zealand, they are all very good questions. I think just so... I think I might focus a little bit on specificism then. I had said before that some of the groups and stuff, they are disputing, or they are kind of trying to dispute space where other authoritarian left currents dispute space. That would be the unions and the student movement and stuff. If you go more into relation to struggles, land struggles you were talking about against land grabbing and this kind of stuff, I think what the proper Teia dos Povos that we are kind of bringing is one of the things that's going on in Brazil right now that we're a little bit more excited about, brings as a difference is that so far anarchist groups, they were, or anarchists, they have been active locally supporting these. This pacifism brought one element to connect organizations in different parts of Brazil and kind of say, look, we exchange on how we do it in the north of Brazil and in the south. And what's interesting is the proper idea of it would be a long talk to talk more about it, but it's kind of like you specifically organize as an anarchist organization, but you do it more around strengthening yourselves while you are part of social movements where you participate in them. And the thing is that the Teia dos Povos has brought pacifist organizations from where it is active to participate in their dynamics. So in Bahia, in Rio Grande do Sul, in Ceará, you have companions from these organizations participating. And recently, because of there is some tendency of institutions trying to influence Teia dos Povos, one of them is the Rosa Luxemburg Foundation from Germany, Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung, because they financed the last meeting we had in Brasilia. And in relation to that, there was kind of like an articulation between anarchists and libertarians in this Latin American sense of libertarian from within the Teia. Okay? So there is this kind of idea of we will probably face some kind of cooptation, institutionalization in the different places we try to articulate. So let's exchange on that and strengthen the, let's say, perspective of autonomy. And yeah, I think, I mean, other anarchists, like in general anarchist groups, I mean, you can also maybe talk to Adrian a little bit more. He has a good panorama because he organizes a book fair, and that's usually where different groups come together. I'm not sure. I would say at the moment we are just kind of like leveled, you know. It's not like a big dynamics, it's not like completely vanishing or whatever. It's kind of it goes a little bit in dialogue to what's happening in general in terms of social resistance. Maybe we can just exchange an idea on pacifism and what, if you're interested, after the meeting, and what the problems were. I mean, we had four organizations that exited. They went out of the Brazilian coordination of anarchism, from Rio, from Sao Paulo, from Goiânia, and from Minas Gerais, and that was like 3 or 4 months ago. And they are now trying to form a new organization at national level. But it's kind of, you know, it shows you a little bit already the contradiction. You go out of a national, and then you say we will be national, but you're not. It's a little bit tricky, the situation. But I think that's more or less about anarchism. What we can say in the big group, I think we've talked a little bit about, but we can exchange ideas maybe later on. I think that's it. Do we want to open again for final comments or something like that, or is it? I think we're done. Okay. Okay then. Thanks a lot, guys.